hate to bring down the great Ennio dell'Orso and Ennio Morricone. From Once Upon a Time in the West, we say goodbye to the great Claudia Cardinale, who passed away a couple of days ago. Many great films. I got to say goodbye here. Got to make room for Harry White. This is Freeform Radio, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. See you next week.
Hardy White, Miracle Nutrition, Miracle Nutrition, Hardy White, Hardy White's Miracle Nutrition, Miracle Nutrition, Hardy White, Hardy White's Miracle Nutrition, Miracle Nutrition, Hardy White, Hardy White's Miracle Nutrition, Miracle Nutrition, Hardy White. Ding 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 dong 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 ding 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 bump, bump. Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. Hardy White's Miracle Nutrition. Hardy. Living in the 50s was filmed in front of a live audience. Hey, Spermy, here's your favorite pizza.
Hey, I owe you.
Nah, it's on the house, Spermy. You're the coolest.
I owe you.
I love it. You're going to eat that whole pizza by yourself, Spermy?
Nah, go ahead and take a piece.
Thanks. Hi, Spermy. Hi, Dickie. Hey, Wiener. Want some pizza?
That's not your pizza to offer.
Oh, I'm sorry, Spermy.
Would you care for some pizza, doo-doo brains?
Oh, I'd love some. I always tell people how cool you are, Spermy.
I owe you. I'm looking for Arthur Spermicelli.
Hey, Spermy, that guy's looking for you.
And who may I say is calling? Are you Spermicelli? Yes. But it depends who's asking, so I might pretend not to be. I'm a detective. Detective Peter Sack. And I have a witness in a case who says they saw Arthur Spermicelli break and enter a motorcycle dealership and steal a motorcycle.
Oh, I'm not your man. I already got a motorcycle.
Yeah? Is it that red and black one out front that says A-E-I-O-U on the side?
Yeah.
Well, I got some bad news. That's the stolen bike, smart guy, and you're under arrest.
Spermy, what's going on?
I don't know, red hair. I think I got set up.
We'll get you out of this, Spermy.
Hey, I owe you.
Everything I know about injustice and personal dignity I learned from 70s television. Well, not everything. My goodness, so much of what children learn, or at least what I have learned, was from television, record albums, and things like that. And sometimes it can be very wrong. There was a song by the Kingston Trio that really messed me up as a child. Now, the Kingston Trio, where are they from? I bet I know. Jamaica? No, not even close. How about that? No, there's three white fellas in short sleeve shirts from San Francisco. San Francisco, did you drive or did you flew? So really they're from there, but they're doing what they call folk music, which is a sort of boring, I don't know how to describe it. You know it when you hear it. It's like pornography. So it's like, oh, I think that's folk music. So they did that. Folk music is not really made by actual folks. So they have other names for things that are the music that we play on our front porch. But for some reason, these records came out. Now, one of the songs was about somebody who, and you know, a lot of these old folk songs are about these old myths that happened back in the day. And this was about a fella that had gotten on public transport in Massachusetts, I believe. And he got, I don't know if it was on subway. I'm not that familiar with Boston area. And he's the man that never returned. So he will ride forever through the streets of Boston. He's the man who never returned. It's a bone damn, but just a friend from profit. He was riding the MTA, and then he didn't have his ticket to the stuff. So I thought that there was a chance he could get on the subway and be trapped there for life if you didn't have the ticket to get off. This is actually true in Japan. That's happened to me. And don't ever lose your ticket, because then you'll be, they say, well, you live here now in the train station. You cannot leave. And say, well, I got in. How did you think I got in? So that's the thing. I thought, man, well, if I get on the cell for years, I want to ride any subways. I still won't go to Boston because I don't want to be trapped there forever. And apparently their mass transit system, they use mass in both senses of the word. That's scary to me. And there were also things like that. You know, there were also television shows. There was one called, and this is really scary for a child, Emergency. And they show the repeats on the show, and I can't really watch it. One, it's terrible. But the two is that it's all trauma. You know, now that got really popular. So I want to watch, you know, I was in an emergency room once, and I found it so interesting because my mother almost died. And I wonder if I could just watch that. I'd just love to be a little fly on the wall and watch people, you know, either perish or, you know, have something really traumatic. No, I'm being sarcastic. I don't want to see that. And so I was watching television, and Gage and DeSoto are the two paramedics. I didn't even know what paramedic meant. So that was an education, and that's good. And I learned all about Latin prefixes like para and meta. So they get called to this emergency where someone has, I mentioned this on the show before, and people that my age understand, but people younger maybe don't. Soda cans used to have detachable tabs. So now you go, and the thing stays on there. And you go, okay, that makes sense. You used to rip the tab off. It's a little ring with a metal, sharp metal. It's like a teardrop made out of a razor blade. And it has a little ring on it. Fun. And those are called pop tops. And Jimmy Buffett said, don't step on them in paradise. But people used to say, what am I going to do with my pop top? So I pulled it off my Coca-Cola RC or what have you. And they say, I'm going to stick it in the can. It's like popping the cork down into the wine bottle. So I'll just do that. Can't get it out. I'll jam it back in. So you take the top off and you put it in there, then you drink. Now the chances that it's going to come at you just the right angle to come that you're going to drink the tab, I guess it's a risk calculation. And people say, I think I probably will know it before it gets in my. But in this case, someone in the imaginary emergency universe, it was either emergency, they changed the name of the show to Emergency Plus One, and the plus one was another emergency. So I don't even, too much. So the person drinks this tab, and it gets lodged in their throat. It won't go down. They've got this little razor blade teardrop with the little keychain on it. So they, I don't know if they called, I don't even think they used to have 911, and you'd have to, like, dial. Actually, it was a rotary. So, oh, someone's choking. Call the emergency. All right. Shh. It's outside our area code. And I said, hello, Rampart Hospital. What's your emergency? My friend had a tab, and he put the tab in the tab, and he's choking on the tab. Excuse me, slow down. Oh, make it. I'll pretend it's a Coca-Cola. He had a Coca-Cola and took the tab off the Coca-Cola, but then he's choking on it. All right, we'll send the gauge and DeSoto to you at this time. Mabel Baker. So then they send out the woo, and they get to the person's and they say, what's wrong? And that person goes, and they go, okay, calm down, calm down. And they look in there and they go, I can see it. If only it had a little ring on it where I could get it with my finger or something. So they said, we can't. So I guess let's just do a tracheostomy. And so, okay, that makes sense. How are we going to do a tracheostomy? Well, I don't know if it was this episode, but I know they've done them on, it used to be like a trope or a tropeostomy. And they would just do them on every show. They're always jamming a hole in people's throats. And I don't know if people don't require it anymore, but you don't even see it. But then they took a ballpoint pen, which again, I don't even think we have anymore, disassembled it and jammed it in their throat. Just go punch as hard as you can, DeSoto. And they open it up and they go, you're fine now. And I guess they just stayed they might have taken him to the hospital for surgery or something. But he had a little pen in his throat and it said, pen had a little advertising on it. It said, you know, so-and-so lumber. You can do it with Lindsay Lumber with our help or something. And that traumatized me because I thought if I drink a soda, someone's going to jam a pen in my throat. I mean, that's how children think. And then I realized that a lot of times, since we watch so much media and everything, parents are busy and sometimes don't read books or anything, that a lot of lessons that we get were just straight out of television for what to do in situations. And I didn't, you know, you don't think, well, I better pay attention to different strokes because they're actually like the surrogate Sunday school for my children or something.
On a very special different strokes.
And that's like saying, you know,
this Sunday in Sunday school, what happens if a drug dealer touches you or something like that?
And they tell kids what to do because people don't. I mean, the situation that you get to see, that's what stories used to be about to warn children. You say, oh, those stories used to be so scary. Yeah, because we're properly equipping children for the world. You know, you're not doing them any favors. You will not go out in the world. Bless you all. You're not going to meet anyone like Elmo, really. Well, you might, but the people that will have houses made of gingerbread that eat you are legion, and you really do need to be, you know, warned about them. And so there's all those cautionary tales for children. It's like, you know, look out, and you'll notice they worked because they're really people can't use the gingerbread house thing. I know there's still predators, but they've had to change what they do because they've been either been warned by different strokes or what have you. And I really have. We make fun of those old television shows that wanted to do something like that. But think of all the ones that didn't. Like, I guess they there were moral lessons perhaps on some of the shows, the Brady Bunch and what have you. And I know that Sherwood Schwartz, of blessed memory, who created that, and Gilligan's Island, did have some idea that it was, you know, he was advocating for a certain way of conducting oneself. And I think it's, you know, it's pretty cool. I mean, I think it's pretty advanced for the day. I mean, making the Brady Bunch, making the dad gay was bold, I think. And but it's a really interesting show. And they do, you know, oh, you shouldn't lie. Don't say George Glass is your boyfriend when he's not, or something. I don't know. They had things like that. Don't steal your dad's blueprints. There were cartoons when I was a child that did that too. Some of them didn't care. Say, go ahead, and then people got concerned. You say, well, I think children are watching this and thinking, can I take an old blunderbuss and shoot a rabbit with it or something? But kids weren't doing that. But they did want to make something a little more gentle. And this is back, I don't know if churches, I think churches are still making children's programs, but it's more intense and they show it to a more limited audience.
But back in the day, they would, like, the Lutheran church made this cartoon. I guess it was the Lutheran. It's at the end, it said, you know, and everybody knows this Davy and Goliath stop motion thing. It's very much ingrained, and everybody is parodied. It's we're very tired of it. And at the end, they play A Mighty Fortress Is Our Lord, which is, I like that part, but it all, it's so interesting. You watch this thing and you go, okay, it's a little good lessons. And then they've got this anthem that screams, you know, this was all religious propaganda. Oh, that's how they suck you in with that gorgeous organ music. That's how religion gets you. You go, oh, you know, I like some of the music. I had a friend that would do that. I'm not saying religion is, but everything is good and or bad. Smells like gravy. So my friend would say, oh, I love the, I'm going to go to a so-and-so church or religious house because I really enjoy the music. And I would always think, I'm not sure is that enough? Because, you know, I like some really objectionable music. I mean, things that I could think could be used as anthems for, you know, like most walkout songs for wrestling or baseball can be very, you know, you feel like I'm going to battle, but I don't want to battle. I don't really want to go to war. What? I know. I made the mistake about reading about actual real wars and people suffering when I was very young. And now I have a very hard time romanticizing them, and I know I should. Again, I'm being sarcastic. I don't think so. My goodness. Oh, I know you have a peaceful, gentle heart like me, and you're so welcome here. It's our little escape. I love being able to do it with you. See, everybody come in here. What is it okay to be my genuine, gentle self? Yes. You don't have to be anything. You don't have to be defensive or cool. You don't have to be self-conscious. Well, a lot of people... Don't worry about that. My goodness. I'm used to being around artists and wonderful, flamboyant, crazy people. And that makes life better. I have more fun there. I don't want to... I open my arms and say, here, you are not. You're totally normal. I don't want to be normal. Well, not like that. But I really feel like this is a space for us. Oh, my goodness. We can talk about things that we can't. Well, I'm not able to talk. Well, just let me finish. I have more training for this. Do you? No, not really. I've been watching this show from the United Kingdom called Portrait Artist of the Year. And what is that? What do you think it is?
A reality show?
Yes.
Where they paint portraits?
Yes, they paint portraits. And this is so much better than cooking shows for me because I can't taste the food and I can't smell it. So I always thought, man, cooking shows are so... The cooking competition shows, especially, I think, are foolish. And I would much rather see them make... plastic food, like plastic Japanese food replicas. You know, that's the same impact on film.
Well, you would be interested in Wim Wenders' Tokyo Ga.
Actually, that does have a big section on making plastic food.
You're welcome.
Oh, my goodness. I'm giving film recommendations. That's why you tune in. So every time I listen to Hardy, I like to have a notepad with me. Because sometimes he'll give recommendations, I'm going to write them on down. Yes, I'm trying to think, and I can't think of any right now. I watched two movies with Black in the title, back to back, and I watched them because both of them had pretty lights. So one was Black Bag, which is a Steven Soderbergh movie, and the other one was an old Michael Mann movie called Black Hat, I think, or Blackhead. I don't know. It had Thor in it. And so a lot of times I watch, and the stories were fine in both of them, but that's not why I watch. Sometimes I just watch for beautiful, pretty lights. I love the way people can photograph all different colored lights and everything. And sometimes I don't need a story. And I like to think of this show that way. I feel like this show is like at its best would be like watching a Michael Mann movie with the sound off and say, wow, look at that. Look at the reflection of those lights in the wet pavement. That just gives me a feeling. Because really all I want to give are feelings. I don't believe in information so much. It's only in so much as it can convey feelings. Because, and even if the feeling is, you know, maybe I shouldn't go over there. So sometimes the information is necessary for survival, but all their survival is also linked to my feelings. And when you say feelings, people always have a lot of propaganda against the word already, so be prepared, you know, because there is an assumption that if you feel something that you're also not thinking, and there's no rational thing. But, you know, we're nothing... to believe you're thinking without feeling is really silly, too, because it's all bottled up, all mixed up in there. So all your thoughts are affected by a lot of other things going on. You know, they're all in context. They all have sauces on them. You can't just get the thing. Can I get it without the sauce? No, we don't make it. The sauce is there. It comes out of it. It's a product of the brain. It's brain sauce. Brain gravy. I'm just naming. I'm naming now made up Frank Zappa albums from the.
Everybody, look at that brain gravy. Bit.
That was Frank Zappa. My Frank Zappa imitation.
Mr. Milchick's House of Gravy.
I never listened to it much. I can't. It's too complicated for me. I'm a very simple person. And so I try not to listen to anybody who self-identifies as a genius because I think, well, I'm not going to. It's going to be lost on me, wasted. I won't know. I won't notice it. So I think I would like to consume the art of the average. So if you are in any way common and mediocre and not a genius, I would be very much interested in the things that you are making. So I'm watching this portrait show, and you can see whether somebody I can't see it up close. You know, seeing a painting in real life is different than seeing a video of it, obviously. But I can still get a sense of the colors and the shapes and all that. And I love to see these different paintings of the same people. So they'll have, what they'll do is they'll bring out, they'll bring out a UK celebrity. So I don't know who these people are. God bless them. They look vaguely familiar. You know, it's like, were you in a Doctor Who episode, but you had a lot of stuff pasted on your face? That kind of thing. But I don't know any of their TV presenters. We don't really have presenters here. We don't call them that. So I don't know what that is. And, so they come out and they paint these celebrities. Now, the painters know who they are, and they're all awestruck. The way we would be if say, oh my God, I get to paint Howie Mandel or something. No, it feels like the same. So they paint these, and then the judges look at them and they evaluate them, and they do a pretty good job, I think, of, you know, they're all great things, but painting people has been around a long time, right? So it's pretty easy to spot when something's new or you've done something interesting, or and people who are really into it can see that. And they have their criticism doesn't replace appreciation. You can really be, you know, in art, sometimes you can say that thing is more impactful, makes me feel more. It doesn't make this other thing bad, you know, because unfortunately in this, they're comparing them. So you don't get the full impact because they're all impactful alone, you know? And we're like that too, and it's the comparing sometimes, I believe. Oh, my goodness. You're also, you're never comparing accurately because you don't perceive accurately. So if you think somebody, if you ever compare yourself to somebody else or somebody else's, you're comparing yourself to a cloud, to a mirage, to a shadow, because you don't even know it's really there. Oh, and you don't want to come up short comparing yourself to a mist, to a vapor. You know whose name is Vapor? Havel. Just a breath. Who is Havel? Havel was one of our first people. So his brother Cain killed him and then went on to star in the TV series Kung Fu, which is a lovely, I don't know if you've ever seen that. It's a Western, but it's a Kung Fu movie, but it's a Western, but it's a Kung Fu thing. And it was supposed to have Bruce Lee in it, but they said, we'd like to go with something a little more authentic. And so they got David Carradine. And David Carradine, he wasn't Chinese, but he had done a lot of drugs. And so he had that kind of, well, he looks it though. Well, and they had him do it. And it was interesting. And I guess the story was like, oh, he really is Chinese, but his father is character actor John Carradine. And that's how they did it in the show. Occasionally his father would come on, you know, and say, Cain, do you remember me? And say, yes, you are my father, John Carradine. That's correct. I think everything should be played broader because I think children would mistake it for reality. So I think theater needs masks. See, imagine a child sees something on stage. It's a grandpa's an actor. We're going to go see grandpa in a thing. Now, if grandpa's an actor in no theater, the child's not going to get upset because it has a mask on. But let's say grandpa's like, oh, grandpa's in, he's going to do Vanya or something. I don't even know, Uncle Vanya. And now now the child's going to be watching this and completely traumatized. And it's you know, it could have been averted if we would have more kabuki and less Chekhov. That's all I'm saying. But I think theater gets too realistic. And that's so silly. I can imagine go seeing a play, and maybe they have plays like this, and there's a hospital scene, and there's just all this blood is flying. It's like a Gallagher show. And you go, if you're going to be seeing, Chicago Hope, the musical, or I don't know, I'm trying to think of, you know, St. Elsewhere, the musical. The first two rows, we've given you some sheets of plastic because it gets a little bloody. So enjoy. What a fabulous day to be an ER doctor. I say, I've never had a busier day in the emergency room applying my skills. Doctor, doctor, come quick. We have an emergency. What is it? This is my theater. That's my theater hospital show that I'm doing. And I'm real happy with it. I like anything where you break the wall and one of the actors is speaking to the audience like Tevye. And, everything should be like that. The most serious things should have one of the characters turn and go, you know, what's going on? Mother-in-laws, am I right? Like that. I'm going to do that more in my performances. I don't feel like I'm really taking things far enough. You know, it's convention. There's all sorts of conventions. Conventional used to be bad. Now people line up for them, call them cons. So I don't want to be conventional. Well, I don't know. So you say, oh, well, there's nobody conventional at cons, at conventions. Comic-Con? So you go, they're not conventional. Well, I'm pretty sure they're dressed like existing characters and everything. They'd be like, if you come to one of my Victorian conventions, you'll notice that none of us are doing anything that really strays past the strict definition of Victorian. And I would like, that's what I've baffled people on Halloween before by doing freeform costumes that aren't anything. You know, people really desperately insist, who are you? I'm not any specific character. Okay, What are you then? Like, are you like a concept, like man who forgot his lunch and so now is, no. You know, what are you? I'm some sort of priest from some underground culture. You know, people don't do things like that because, I can't, there's no recognition. And art runs into this problem. Is that if you don't have enough things to grab hold to in your art, if there's no recognition, it's very difficult to lure people in. So the best stuff has some sort of, the best art, the best kind of genres are like those deep underwater fish that have sharp teeth and they have a little worm hanging from their face. Do you feel me? So this is like Christian rock used to do this. So Christianity is the big toothy carnivorous fish. And then rock is that little worm hanging from the face. And you go, you know, I like rock. And you come in. So other genres do this too. Everything can lure, you can get lured into new ideas through something existing. Does that make sense? No, exactly. So, you know, you can mix different traditions and everything like that. So I could go on the radio and say, well, you're used to hearing talk radio, right? Or podcasts. Hey, I'm Hardy White. Today, we're going to do a deep dive into, well, ourselves. Now, diving into oneself seems like you might run into some physical problems. We all know what happens when the character Popeye would take his head and put it between his legs and then somehow manage to come up from behind himself without twisting inside out like a Möbius strip, exposing all his innards and everything. All that spinach splattered out there just because Popeye wanted to transform himself beyond the limits of physical laws. Is that what we're doing? I don't know. I don't know. My goodness, I don't want to scare you. So I want to, since we're all used to that kind of podcast and things explaining, hey, I want to introduce my guest today because that's another thing it's for.
Hi.
It's talking to someone, it's so great to have you.
Oh, good.
So it's talking to someone else now about something, and you're going to be able to hear a conversation without having to participate in it, which for me and my friends is a dream sometimes. Although I'm not able to do it in the wild. I've gone out to lunch with some friends that are really interesting before, right? And I think, I'm just going to sit there and listen. And it's not possible. Because occasionally I'm just like, no, it's time to say something stupid. It's time to veer the conversation off course. And so then I'll speak up. But it is lovely sometimes to just listen. I mean, I don't even know what I would say if it was Mike Douglas and John and Yoko. And me. I think it'd go the same way. I could go, Mike, you go ahead and ask. I'm just going to sit here. Y'all, I just like to listen to you. That's how I would be. But on the radio or any kind of listening experiences that involves voices, there's a couple things we need. One of them usually is storification. You want somebody that's maybe giving you a story or something to anticipate what they're going to say next. Man walks up to a castle. Castle? Where's the castle? The castle. It's in a stormy countryside. He's been driving all night. And it's not like Rocky Horror, but it is like Rocky Horror. So he's driving all night, this man. And he comes up to this castle because he turned on a road that said Castle Drive. And he didn't register. But it wasn't Castle Drive. It was the driveway of the castle. So he pulls up to this place and he thinks, well, maybe, you know, first of all, he tries the door because it looks like a public space, right? It must be a hotel or something. He goes, oh, no, maybe it's a private residence. So then he does the door knocker. And dong, dong, dong. And he can hear now it resonates throughout that this must be a huge castle. And he's a little bit scared of who's going to come to the door. It might be somebody with a very elongated face. He imagines that they look like, I forget who the character actor is, but there's people with very elongated faces. And then he thought, what if the face is so elongated that it's unnatural? Or it looks like You know, some people have very long faces. But what if it was so long you go like, I'm not sure they're human. Right? I mean, that's a very long face. I think about this about the portrait painters, that they don't look at some of these people and go like, man, you have the weirdest face. I mean, everything is like just slightly off where it usually is from other people. Or the shapes. I'm seeing so many shapes. I think I could make your whole head out of dodecahedrons. Just linked together, tessellated. Tessellated octahedrons. And, could you? I think so. That's what you look like to me. Blessed friend, beautiful living thing, beautiful creature. Oh, I can love some ugly, beautiful. My dog is aged. And you know how aged dogs are. They start looking rough. Boy, the hair gets rough. They get all things all growing on them and everything. But she's still got her sweet face and disposition. She acts like a little puppy inside, you know. But as we grotesquely rot. And I love it. I embrace it. And now as I'm moving into stuff growing all over me kind of age, I love it. And I hope that somebody will hug me the way that I hug. And they will. I can trick people into hugging me. The way that I hug the dog. And I believe it. Oh, this connection's so important. You know, that just collection of connection of love that's not messed with by anger or fear. When we're with one another, I feel we can love freely. Ugh, nobody has to witness me over here. I don't have to be tough for a moment. I can acknowledge how difficult life is, even at its easiest. Because at its easiest, if you're a thoughtful person, if you've done any self-examining, if you are curious in any way, the older you get, you will perhaps become less sure of things. You know, life has had time to inform me, but mostly it has used that time to disabuse me of my preconceptions. And they weren't always preconceptions. They're usually conceptions. And then I carry them around for a while, and I bring them, and then they're preconceptions. And then they get shattered. I am fine with that. I am learning all the time and understand that learning means that you have to unlearn things too. Because nothing is permanent. If you try to make it permanent, everything that you're going to fill up that hard drive. That's the thing with nostalgia. What's happened is you've front-loaded. You go, I got all this space, all this hard drive space. And I start liking things. Start liking things early on and like them all, put them all in there, learn things, put it all in there. And then you get to a certain, you go, you know what, I think I'm full. And you sort of are. Because what you have to learn to do is sort of bring things in and let them go through you and let them go again. And understand that, you know, the photographs aren't the thing. That even the record album is the thing. You can hold on to that record album. You can go buy remixes of it or whatever. You can collect just that album, but you will never experience the feeling of hearing it for the first time ever again. The only way you're going to get that feeling is to hear something you've never heard. It's really hard. It's hard and lonely. I've to be constantly unmoored or something, to be always rediscovering, but the forest changes. If you walk through the woods and you think you know the woods because you've been through once, you only know the woods if you walk through them daily. Because things change so quickly. So that map that you made of the woods ages ago is no good anymore. And it may trick you into thinking it is because some of the major things are still there. But to be a real creature in the woods, you got to be flexible. What is it today? And when you do, you can do it. You can do it. Hang out with other like-minded monkeys.
Hi.
Hello. I'm also a monkey.
I'm a monkey. I'm looking for fruit.
Some monkey's talking. It's like, I'm so sorry. I spend a lot of my day pretending I'm different animals, but not like the kind of animals in Disney cartoons, because they're always too smart. You know, and not that animals are smart, but they're not. I don't think they think like we do. You know, I think we think of a lot about a bunch of dumb, useless things, and animals might too, but I don't know. They seem more. They have to be in the moment. You know, it's more a survival necessity for them, and we can live with an amazing amount of self delusion. You know, you can go your whole life thinking you're Napoleon. Now, if you actually are Napoleon, I think it's still somewhat of a self-delusion. You know, are you, though? Is anybody Napoleon? I had my same friend that went to church because he liked the music once corrected me because he thought that I said, what did I say? I said something about Nepali, or maybe I said something about Nepal. And he thought I meant I was referring to Naples. And I said something about Nepal, maybe in an adjectival form. And he said, the word is Neapolitan. And it wasn't Neapolitan. So I thought that was funny. And why is that funny? Because when you correct somebody and you're wrong, and it's happened, I've done it, and if you've ever been on the internet, you've seen people do it. There's something really enlightening about that. That almost seems like a poem about being alive. Because we're so sure about things. And then as that certainty evaporates, you get the eyes of someone who's just realized that they don't know where they are, that they thought they did. Hey, my whole show, October 11th, up there in Jersey City at Monty Hall, October 11th, that's a Saturday. I'm doing two, get your tickets. I'm doing two shows, 3 p.m. and 8 p.m. And it's for the station, and it's a movie, okay? So I made a one-hour six-chapter, semi-silent film. And it's beautifully shot with different kinds of, it's got different segments using different vintage video cameras and stuff from the 80s and all. It's really, really interesting looking, but then also beautiful cinematic sequences and abstract sequences by famous artists that you've heard of. So, I'm going to be standing in front of it, narrating it, talking about it. And this comes from a Japanese silent film tradition called Benshi, where you, instead of having like a organ player, they have somebody standing up there going like, look at that mountain. Oh, you ever seen a mountain so majestic you can almost smell the cherry blossoms coming from it? Look at that. As we walk on the snow-encrusted peaks of these grand, majestic mountains, we think about how timeless and ageless they are, and though there was that kind of thing. And are people from Japan sound like they're from Mississippi? No, I just whenever I'm about to do a foreign accent, I do Jerry Clower. That just helps me. Except for UK accents. I mainly do bad. I realize that almost no American who hasn't really lived there can do any kind of UK accents. So I do them to be as a sort of teasing of any of my UK friends, because I know how it's so irritating to them. And it's just like, you know, Dick Van Dyke. I think he's doing it on purpose. You know, he obviously had some Cockney friends. He was just like, I'm going to mess with them, you know. And that's how I feel often. So I will do that. So I know, I'm being self-aware. I say, well, if he really knew what he was doing, he wouldn't be doing that. Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? Who knows why we do things or say things or make jokes? I don't. But I am constantly self-analyzing. I'm just not getting anywhere. But I think getting somewhere is a mistake. Oh, my goodness. You don't know. That's all I know. The only thing I do know is you don't know either. Maybe you do, but if you do, what's it to me? That's very profound, I think. And now it's time to sing. If this were church, I would then say, thank you. Take out your hymnals. A mighty fortress is our Lord. A bulwark never ceasing. I think that's correct. I don't know that I would, if I were, and I'm not God, but say, ah, Lord, I love you. Oh, I love you too, little creation. I love you so much, you're a bulwark. Beg your pardon? It's like on a fortress. Okay. You're a mighty fortress. Hey, I'm losing weight. I'm slimming down. No, my God, is that blasphemy? You're just talking, this is blasphemy. Oh, my goodness. What I do is, I don't think is blasphemy. But we are drowning in it. And how can you, you want a Bible lesson real quick?
Okay.
Let me give you a jiffy Bible lesson. Don't hold me to it. Kind of thing. Okay? Because I kind of forget where it is in the book, but it has to do with blasphemy. So there is an instance in the book where somebody is killed for blasphemy. So we make jokes about that. They said the four-letter name of God, and it sounds like superstition, right? So you said God's name, you die. But that's not the story in the Bible. So it isn't just like, you know, I was playing cards, and I got a bad hand, and I yelled, you know, G-O-D something. That isn't it. Okay? So the scenario is that there's these folks in the tribe, and they're not like, this isn't exactly cool, but, you know, there's status within the, let's say we have a tribe, and you're on the, let's say we have a community, and you are the Shklerb family, and the Shklerb family lives on the edge of town, and they do things like dump trash. The Shklerbs, you know, the Shklerbs, we love them. They're in our community, but again, they're like, you know, stop dumping trash and please control your dogs. So that family, the son starts being incredibly antisocial, and he does the ultimate, and this is just, you know, does the you people thing to his community. And that is the sin. The sin would be cursing your neighbors. The sin is looking at the people that help you, that are there protecting you, supporting you, and saying, I don't care about you. Curse your God. And your God being your values and everything like that. So it isn't like, now that's for a specific religion, but you can take that lesson, right? You can see, oh, you know what? That kind of hateful ingratitude, that is sinful. That does seem bad to me. Let's take it out of the context of it being somebody's religious rules and say, like, if I'm your helpful neighbor, and then you decide one day that, you know, you now hate me for some reason, that is super duper sinful. And I believe, but not everybody does. And you don't listen to me. And please correct me, because I realize that I err on the side of this silly, soft-hearted. My heart is so stupidly soft, I would be showing mercy to all sorts of people, and that is that's just not I don't know, it's just not something that people are interested in too much, but I know we are. That's the thing. No. So the good thing is nobody's listening to us right now, so we can say these things and say, oh my goodness, I'd love to just love and show my love and gratitude for being alive, and I'm confronted with so much injustice, and I did not get to see
the very special Different Strokes Tuesday on a very special Miracle Nutrition. Hardy, blah, blah, blah.
So that's what I think, you know, we need our very special Miracle Nutrition time together. Oh, and I'd love to see you in person. And that's so great. Get real hugs and everything. That's so, what a blessing that would be, you know, to just realize and look in each other's eyes and say, good gosh, there's an old weathered human being, and they are valuable. You really need to be confronted with other people's existence and humanity, forced to stare them in the eye. I would love it if you could just, like Spock, I could just grab people by the neck and force other people's, you know, experience into their heads and say, look at this. What do you think now? You know, are you prepared to live all those lives? Could you change place with anybody on Earth? Do you think you've done something so special that you don't deserve it? Whatever happens to the least, that's what happens to everybody. This is a closed system, and those are real truths. So saith the Hardy. You hurt me. If you hurt other Hardy listeners, you hurt me, right? So we can all put ourselves, you know that. So that, imagine the universe probably thinks that too.
No.
I don't know. I don't care. I don't care. If you and I together, and say, this is an unfeeling cold universe that's indifferent to our, you know, needs, or and I'd say, come on, sit next to me, we're having cookies. I love you, we're having cookies. Sit here, we're going to have a laugh. Then we're mightier than the universe then, because we can love and forgive. And we're mightier than any black hole, any universe. I think that's, can you imagine being such a small thing? If the universe is a cold, a harsh place, can you imagine with the tiniest little things getting away with something in the face of that, doing something that the universe doesn't want, you know, loving and caring and bringing light. Whoa, just like a little lesser than a less thing, and that's coming from somewhere. Oh my goodness, then that seems very powerful to me. I think it's undervalued. We look at the destructive forces in the universe, say, that must be where the power is. Oh, it's not. It's subtle. It's mist. It's mist and it's mist. M-I-S-T, M-I-S-S-E-D. The mist is mist often. Ah, my friends. Did you ever be like in a medical situation where the compassion of the people taking care of you is amplified? Like you just feel like, oh my God, thank you so much. Even though they're doing their job, maybe, right? I don't know if you've ever, but I'm just overwhelmed by gratitude when I'm at my most vulnerable and there's a human helping me. It's almost too much. You know, it's almost too much, especially if it's a stranger. And it gives me such hope. And I realize, oh, this is the real power of the universe is right here. It's so subtle. Of course, it's going to be constantly shouted down. You'll never hear it, you know, on a regular basis, but it's there. Oh, it's there. And it's even buried in some hearts that you think are hopeless. Because there's nothing scarier than a frightened human, or really a frightened, any kind of frightened ape is terrifying. Really any frightened animal. I'd say a frightened vertebrate is something to be scared of in itself. So understand, you know how you are when you're scared. Just imagine that your enemies are also terrified. I mean, it doesn't do you any good. But, I don't know. It does me some good sometimes when I think, at least I know that. No one's getting away with anything. Oh, my goodness. The things I say are probably not true. But, if you've ever had to take care of children, you realize that sometimes there's lying, malicious lying, and there's kind lying. You know that. And it's not really lying. But, you can't, you do have to change what you say to different levels of hearts. And so I tried to do that and try to keep my understanding.
Could you go back to doing funny voices?
Could I go back to doing funny voices? Yes. Any other questions? Yes.
How do you come up with your ideas?
How do I come up with my ideas for what?
Forget it.
All right. Any other questions?
Are any of your voices based on people you know?
No. Anybody else?
What's the live show going to be about?
Oh, thank you for asking. What the live show is going to be about, it's called Hardy White's The Map, which has double meaning. It's the map, Hardy White's map. Hardy White is the map. So what it's about is answering the question, where am I? Where am I? You say at the end of my, I know a lot of you say, I listened to that B-side of that MGMT single that you did, Hardy. And at the end, there's a little child going, where am I? Where am I? Well, that is the question for this show. That's where it started. And this is where it's going. And we're going to examine that together. Where are we? So as long as you can answer that question just on October 11th, and the answer is Jersey City, I think we can get close to answering the question in a broader sense. Isn't that wonderful? Oh, you don't know how much you mean to me. Also, the fleeting nature, the temporary nature of all this is not lost on me. Oh, no. I want to hold on and cling to things. It's like having children. Can't just one of them stay with me? Take care of them? You don't want to turn them all loose? Say, can't you just stay here? I love me. But that's not the sign of success. It's moving on. Do something and be able to move on. And that's how I feel like that. Give. And then I'm not moving on from the radio station, but the listeners move on. You move on more than I do. So I was listening. Now I'm listening to something else. Exactly. As it should be. As it should be. Because I also know the chance that if you try to say the right thing and don't worry about the right time, you can't control. And who hears it, you can't always control. So that's why I say if I have something that I want that's valuable to me that I could share with you, I try not to fret about whether you got it or not. Because in my end, just put it out there. And then I can't worry about whether you got it or not. I hope you do. I bless you so much. And I think when I started out on radio, I still do. I still feel like, oh, love me. I need praise. I need recognition and everything like that. But that after I think about it for 2 seconds, that feeling, I can get that feeling to go away. And I can get that feeling to go away. Because I think back to times that I said something that was important to maybe one person. And they said, what you said helped me a lot, or saved me, if you're lucky. Now, if before I started, someone said to me, you're going to be on 10, 15 years, you're going to save a life.
I go, one? One. And then what?
And then 10 years of people being nonplussed.
No, that means that you are so overwhelmed, you have nothing more to say.
No, I know that's not the word I want.
Being, nothing that dramatic.
Would you do it? I mean, it's like a heat paradox. You know, how many people do you need to help? One? Half of one? What if you helped somebody and then they got unhelped? You know? Is that a failure? So you got to consider all these things. You know, what are you looking for yourself? And what am I looking for? What help do I need? And can I give it to myself? So, you are listening to Miracle Nutrition. I didn't realize it's the end of the show. Oh, I love you so much. I'm such a goofball. You're listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York, and online worldwide, WFMU.org. Oh, thank you for joining me, and I will see you again, Nick.
Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony.
on and on. I shall sit here for days.